Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis, coming to you from Tehran. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Pakistanis are involved in a long march protesting against Islamabad's agreeing to reopen the border into Afghanistan. The question that many are asking, will this time make a difference? Will Islamabad listen to their people demand? That's what we'll be taking a look at on this news analysis.
Anti-US sentiments are at an all-time high in Pakistan. People take to the streets on a daily basis against the government's decision to reopen vital supply lines to US-led forces in Afghanistan. Islamabad closed the land routes last year after a deadly US airstrike that killed 24 Pakistani soldiers. Islamabad demanded a formal apology for reopening the routes, but it ultimately settled for US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, saying she was sorry for the losses. Pakistanis from all walks of life are furious at the government's ties with Washington. They say they don't want to be part of the war in Afghanistan.
We are protesting against the government's decision to resume the NATO supplies, because these supplies are carrying lethal weapons and these are being used by US forces against us and our Muslim brothers.
But that's not all. US assassination drone attacks continue to take a heavy toll on Pakistani nationals. Only a few days after the supply lines were reopened, an unmanned US aircraft killed over 20 people in Pakistan's northwest. Washington claims that drones target militants operating against US-led forces in Afghanistan, but the statistics show most of the victims are civilians. Many Pakistanis feel they are let down by their government's inaction toward frequent violations of their country's sovereignty by the US.
The people really take their sovereignty, the sovereignty of a nuclear state, which is their country, very seriously. They believe they have been let down by the leadership across the board, that they don't believe that their government is a truly independent government.
Things are also not looking good on the other side of the border in Afghanistan, a war waged under the pretext of eradicating militancy and restoring peace seems nowhere near achieving its goals. Security situation remains dire despite the presence of about 140,000 US-led soldiers. Just on Saturday, the wedding ceremony of the daughter of a top Afghan official and lawmaker turned into bloodshed after a bomb went off in the wedding hall, and civilians continue to be targeted by night raids carried out by foreign troops. Scenes of the massacre in this Kandahar village by a group of US soldiers in March are still fresh in the minds of Afghans. And to add insult to injury, American forces have frequently caused anger among Afghans by burning copies of Islam's holy book and disrespecting the bodies of the Afghan dead. With so much grievances against US-led forces, many analysts doubt they can have any positive impact on the region's political landscape.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guest to the program. First of all, right here in the studio with me, very happy to welcome Mr. Aga Morteza Puya, who is the Secretary General of Awami Islami Mahaz.
My pleasure.
And in London, I'd like to welcome Mr. Shahid Qureshi, writer and political analyst. And in Kabul, Afghan journalist Mr. Sultan Faizi. Thank you all for being with us. And I'd like to start off with you, Mr. Puya, right here in the studio. Since November, the borders were closed, and just recently they've agreed to open it again. Why do you think it took so long? How significant, first of all, is it that Islamabad kept it closed that long, and what does it mean right now? Do you think that the U.S. put so much pressure on them at this point in time, or how do you see it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. My personal feeling is that there seems to be something going on behind the scenes, the sudden shutting off and the sudden opening of the whole thing. First of all, this war on terror is a totally false war. It's a totally false war. It should never have been there in the first place. Pakistan should not have lent its shoulder to the US under Mr. General Musharraf. But the policies continued, and whatever the present hierarchy is in Pakistan, whether military or the political arm or the Chief Justice, they are all appointed by the U.S. And this was a transition management which the U.S. managed to keep the war on terror going, which is a totally false war. It's as false as the jihad wars against the Soviet Union.
So let me just stop you right here. So are you saying then the decisions that Islamabad is making, basically not independent of Washington's policies, but basically an extension?
Yes. If they waited for 7 months for an apology from the U.S., and the U.S. used to apologize to Pakistan every day by carrying out a drone attack. That was their apology. And we could do nothing about it. They have to leave Pakistan. We have to cancel our arrangements. They are keeping on shifting the goalpost. If something was imposed upon us, we should not continue with it for the last 10 years. It's criminal and it's absolutely against our sovereignty and against our integrity.
Okay, well, let me switch over to London, get to Mr. Qureshi in on this discussion. Mr. Qureshi, how do you see it? I mean, has it been just a total disrespect by Islamabad, I would say, not just United States, but Islamabad, in basically ignoring the demands of its people, because the Pakistani people from the very beginning were not very keen on having this military equipment, this NATO or U.S.-led forces coming through the country, but they have continually been met by deaf ears from its government. So how do you see it in general?
Well, it's a very interesting situation that in the past 60 years, the Pakistan's relationship with the United States has been always been one-sided, and it's very abusive. For example, in financial terms, Pakistan suffered about losses of $70 billion in past 12 years, and the total U.S. aid to Pakistan was about $28 billion in last 60 years. Even the in past 3 years, the money which Pakistan should have got for the coalition support fund, they haven't got that, which was about $3 billion. So Pakistan fighting this war on credit. And how is it making, the U.S. has been cleverly making this possible is through the as your guest in your studio said, to the people they planted or the people they support or the assets they have in Pakistan. I mean, it's a situation where the country is being ruled by assets or pawns or agents or whatever you want to call. So they are not the true representative of the people of the Pakistan, as the previous elections were rigged, and we know that over 3 crores, which is about 30 million votes, were false. So this government is not a true representative. And I must say that I don't want to get into any more trouble for my colleagues, especially the journalist colleague, who are being killed and threatened by the mafias in Karachi and in all over Pakistan, in northern areas, by the Taliban or other elements, just because those journalists are bringing up the truths out. And some of these people are claiming that these killings and these target killings and these threats to journalists are happening under the pretext of the U.S. Or i.e., which is the U.S. is asking them to do it, which is not okay. True. I don't believe that the U.S. has a policy to kill journalists or to threat journalists. This is the mafia, financial mafia in Karachi, which is ruling the country and making more losses to the country than this whole war on terror.
Okay, well, let me switch over to Afghanistan, actually, get Mr. Faizi in on this. Now, of course, Pakistan has gotten involved in this, being as an excuse by the United States and its allies in getting involved in Afghanistan to begin with. But Pakistan itself seems to have been sucked into this, and now that country is basically having so many problems and almost falling apart in a lack of security. After more than 11 years of the United States and its allies being in your country and also having an effect on Pakistan, why are we seeing such an increase in insecurity, not only on the borders, but we see it inside of Afghanistan and we see it inside of Pakistan, even with drone attacks?
Yes, as you mentioned that in Afghanistan, the security in the last decade has increased. And the conclusion of crisis in the country shows that all the efforts by the international community and the U.S.-led coalition forces in this country was not so successful. And the government today is dealing with the mass attacks and mass instability in this country. And this is considered as they were not successful in this country. And the crisis between Pakistan and U.S. is that your guest has mentioned that it was the matter of some deals behind the curtains, and also it took a bit more time that U.S. apologized, and finally Pakistan agreed to open the NATO road towards Karachi. And yes, as you said, that here in Afghanistan, it's getting actually worse day by day. And the only problem is that they're not reaching a true result in terms of bringing peace in Afghanistan. This is one of the biggest problems that is coming up nowadays in this country, especially removing some top politicians and some top officials in this country, which have been, who have been killed by some unknown reasons, and on the other hand, the Taliban are not taking responsibility for more attacks which are taking places nowadays. So this shows that no Taliban are taking responsibility, neither Al-Qaeda, and also the government or the other sides are condemning these attacks, or the ISAF is condemning these attacks. And this shows that there is a big problem that Afghan people have to face in the near future as the election is in the upcoming 2 years.
All right. Well, Murtaza Puya, our guests in Kabul just talked about that they haven't been successful in bringing peace and security to the region. But I guess the question is the goal really peace and security?
Certainly not. Far from it. This is a policy which the U.S. has been following in all perversity, a policy called Pax Zionica, a peace for the Zionists, the U.S. and India, while the rest of us can go to hell. They demonize you first, then they destroy you, and then they try to give development funds to you. My friend from London, Qureshi, he says that they're talking of costs of a few 30 billion and 40 billion and 70 billion. The U.S. owes Pakistan at least $3 trillion for the damage it has done to Pakistan in the last 35 years alone. Forget the cost before. They have destroyed Pakistan, they have destroyed Afghanistan, and they tried to destroy Iran also. They inflicted whatever possible crimes they could on Iran. And so all three countries are paying this price for the preservation of the Zionist entity. Every war that has been fought in the last 35 years, every war, whether it's in Lebanon or whether we see the unrest in Syria or whatever it is, the U.S. has got this pro-Zionist policy and trying to sustain a regime which is not sustainable. So therefore they go to any length to commit crimes. They shot down a passenger airline once, and now they're going on. All this destabilization in Pakistan is so that Pakistan does not emerge as a sovereign Islamic country.
Okay, well, Mr. Qureshi, how do you see it now with the situation that is happening in Pakistan? It seems this time around, though, that the Pakistani people are basically saying that they have had enough. What's the difference, first of all? Do you think that the people, because we've seen demonstrations, we've seen marches in many different cities, and that the people are saying that enough is enough, will they be able to put enough pressure on Islamabad to actually bring about some changes?
Well, people's power is always great, and one should not underestimate people's power. But at the same time, no one can ride on your back unless it is bent. And with the greatest respect to your guest in your studios, It is not about the cost that how much money has been lost. It is about the how the nation state is building itself, and the leadership in the past 60 years was of Pakistan was like if the U.S. says jump, and they used to say how high. Even the current regime is the same side. They want to jump, and the current regime's response towards the opening the NATO supplies. Surely NATO is a big alliance of more than 50 countries, and they need to consider some ground realities in their mind. But at the same time, the U.S. is also in trouble itself. If the U.S. solves its internal problems, then they might not have all these external problems, which, like your guest has mentioned, in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, or in Syria, or in Africa. The U.S. internal problems are linked with the financial terrorists, which are based in various banks and war industries, who needs these kinds of conflicts and wars, war zones, to produce one, their weaponry; two, to keep the U.S. People in fear that if you don't do that, then we will lose the sovereignty, or they are going to come and attack us. I have no doubt that nobody is going to come and attack or invade the United States from Afghanistan, Pakistan, or Syria, or anywhere else. There is no assessment, available at the next maybe 50 years, that any chance of Pakistan is going to invade the United States. It is the fear which is created by the internal elements in the United States. And they are, for example, they are spending about $7 billion a month in Afghanistan, which is a lot of money for the US taxpayers. And to keep that thing running, the private military contractors, the mercenaries, they are fueling these wars, and they have bring shame to the honorable profession of soldiering. At the same time, I'll bring it back to the original question about Pakistan, that Pakistan's military and the 180 million people are available to the United States for $1.5 billion a year for rent, if you allow me to say. And this whole country has been rented for such a cheap rate with this military. Now, with greatest respect to the people in power, if they just have a peace in one city, Karachi, they might not need any aid from the United States, maybe for a longer term. The amount of money drained from Pakistan every year in the name of development, in the name of corruption, is far higher and far more than the U.S. is offering to Pakistan.
Okay, well, Mr. Faizi, how do you see the same point that our guest in London, Mr. Qureshi, just brought up about how the Pakistani people have been used? What about your people? Do you feel that the Afghan people have been used in this situation, and that a sort of chaos is being continually created in order to make sure that these U.S.-led forces stay in the region?
Well, I have to say that after passing a decade, the Afghan people are really concerned about their future, especially beyond 2014. Despite the help that international community did in Tokyo, that committed to help Afghan people beyond 2014. But on the other hand, we can see in the country that Taliban or the other small groups commit crimes like assassinating women or some innocent Afghans. And these facts make the Afghan people to decide for asking the U.S.-led coalition forces to stay for long term in Afghanistan. And these facts are really unacceptable for the Afghan people. On the other hand, the government, which last year, actually it's a couple months ago, signed a strategic pact with the U.S. To have military base in Afghanistan, and not to fight against the insurgents, but to have the bases for supporting the Afghan military forces. So yes, as you mentioned, and your guest in London mentioned, that yes, Afghan people are really concerned about their future in terms of having a bright future. This will be much clearer after 2014, and we will witness that the future will change swiftly after the combat forces of the coalition-led forces will step out from Afghanistan and withdraw their forces, and we will feel much clear results in the next okay. 2 years.
All right. Let me switch yes. back to Tehran because I'm almost out of time. Now, Mr. Puya, let's look at the U.S. drone attacks, especially that we have seen a lot of happening in your country with more and more civilians being killed. How likely do you think that the Pakistani people will be able to bring that pressure? I would go back to that question I asked previously, that will bring a change in Islamabad, because basically you have said that Islamabad is an extension of Washington. So will there be a difference? Will there
definitely,
be a change made?
Definitely. There is even the present government, which has continued with the misery imposed upon us during Musharraf's time, they themselves are showing a bit of a possibility of a U-turn and making a new security environment for Pakistan and interfacing with China and with Russia. So the U.S. has now coming to the conclusion that it finally has to leave Pakistan. And that's why it's talking of making bases in Afghanistan, and that NATO, non-NATO, most allied country with the U.S. and the rest of it. The basic decisions Pakistanis have taken, despite all the weakness they have shown in the past, they have taken the decision that they do not want the U.S. in Pakistan in any shape and size. This is clear. So what the U.S. is trying to do, it is building a huge embassy in Kabul, and it's building a very huge embassy. But basically, it has taken the decision that it has to quit this region. This decision has taken, and more important than this decision is the decision that the U.S. has taken 20 years ago. They are talking of NATO and 40 countries. These are all fig leaves. The U.S. does not need them. They're just fig leaves. And now they're depending on new fig leaves called Qatar and the Ali Saud. These are the new fig leaves after Saddam. And now the Turks are lending their shoulder. And I hope there'll be a change in Turkey, if not at least a change of government, at least a change in attitude. Now, most important thing is the U.S. has decided to quit this region. Either it comes to terms with the genuine Islamic sentiments and people's sentiments in this region, which it could make up, because it made up with China at one time. So it could make up with the genuine Islamic sentiment. And the other decision that has been taken is that the U.S. will not fire a single shot, not a single shot, to save the Zionists or the Ali Saud.
Okay. Well, and on that note, a very interesting note to end with, I thank you for being with us. We're out of time. I thank Mr. Aga Morteza Puya, Tehran, Secretary General Awami Islami Mahaz, and from London, writer and political analyst Mr. Shahid Qureshi in London, and Afghan journalist in Kabul, Mr. Sultan Faizi. Thank you all for being with us. And viewers, thank you for being with us as always. Join us right here, same time, same place, for another news analysis. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thank you so much, and goodbye.